This is a violent and often disturbing tale. You have been warned. Ethan Eternal, Chapter 29, The Darkest Hour. David fumbled with a large set of keys, trying to find the one that fit a colossal iron door. Deborah turned back to the hallway behind them. There was a dull noise like muffled gunfire somewhere in the distance. Someone was attacking this compound. She felt a tinge of adrenaline at the thought of what was happening nearby. The giant man, George, as the boy had called him, had also mentioned a name that echoed endlessly in her mind. Kevin was still alive. She imagined Kevin and the ranger, Perry Long, were here to secure her rescue and finally put an end to this. Deborah said a silent prayer as the butler at last opened the ancient doorway. She turned to see something unexpected. The hall they had traversed was long, white, elegant if not somewhat sterile, but very neatly kept. The corridor extended into this new doorway, but across the threshold, the fine construction of the previous rooms vanished. Instead, the walls here were comprised of steel mesh pressed against dark dirt and rock. Wooden planks rose up from the floor of wet gravel, meeting larger oak at the ceiling. Dangling lights were spaced every 10 feet or so, and went on and on into the distance. She could see no immediate end to them as the tunnel stretched on.
"What's this?"
Deborah asked abruptly. David urged her forward as he stepped down a few inches and into the new passageway. She hesitated for a moment. A dull thunder rolled somewhere above, loosing tiny specks of rock and soil from the ceiling ahead. The lights flickered for a moment. A few of them went out and did not come back on immediately. Deborah felt a shiver move down her back as she looked to David and then the hallway. But her feet did not move.
"Hurry, Deborah! We have to go now!"
She swallowed and pressed herself for this new leap of faith. But before she could manage her nerves, an odd mechanical sound resounded from the opposite end of the fine white hallway. Deborah spun around. David's eyes widened.
"Oh, dear God,"
the old man whispered. The wall at the end of the hallway split in two. A bright white light blinded Deborah for a second. So bright and so white that the hall appeared to darken for an instant. She lifted her hand to block some of the illumination and then discovered the reason for this unexpected development. The light gave way to shadow as a massive figure exited a hidden elevator. George saw them immediately. Within the span of only 2 seconds, he discerned not only their identities, but the fullness of what was transpiring. He moved with precise speed and began to draw a large black pistol from his coat. As he did this, David grabbed Deborah's arm and pulled her down onto the gray pebbles below. She dropped just as George's first bullet passed above her. George released a guttural cry and began charging towards them with enraged eyes, firing his gun again and again. "Help me!" David screamed as he tried desperately to push the thick iron door shut. Deborah was stunned for a second, and then got to her knees and pushed with all of her strength. The giant rushed forward, only a few feet away, as the door closed with a heavy echo. David pulled a lever to his left that looked to be at least 100 years old. A slab of steel, 4 inches thick, dropped down onto a support that was affixed to the door's frame. Ricochets clanked and indentations appeared where George spent the rest of his ammunition. But the door held, for now. The butler lifted Deborah up and began to speak as the door suddenly banged from the impact of something terrible. David paused, and the roar came again. Deborah looked to him with concern. "Do you think it will hold him?" David shook his head. "No." She turned and glanced down the long tunnel again, and then back to David. She had gained a new determination to survive, and it was apparent in her voice. "Then we have to get out of here. Do you know where this goes?" He swallowed as the door shook once more. He was distant as he replied, overwhelmed by the fear at the reality that now faced them.
"Yes. Yes, it's an old mine shaft. Mr. Dorin constructed this home on top of an old silver excavation from the 1800s. He has an affinity for old things." Deborah raised an eyebrow. This did not seem like a good time for levity, but she could not help herself.
"Not today, he doesn't."
The butler turned to her and blinked, but then smiled slightly as his senses returned.
"I have some life in me, Miss Renard. I think I should like to keep it that way. Let's go."
He began stepping quickly ahead. Deborah followed closely.
"Where does this lead?" she asked.
David peered into the distant passage and winced.
"There should be an exit somewhere ahead. These tunnels look level, but I assure you that they are not. As we walk, the floor will gradually fall. I remember very clearly a heated exchange between Mr. Dorian and an opinionated geologist back when the site was being completed. The tunnel drains down, and that, my dear, will lead us where we need to go."
They continued to walk for a minute or so. The air was growing cold, damp, stale. Deborah was not claustrophobic, but the confined space, the tremors of the battle above, and the threat temporarily suspended at their backs, was feeding a growing dread. She was about to say something to try and lighten the mood, when all of the lights abruptly darkened. A wave of rolling echoes boomed from every direction. David and Deborah dropped to the ground and heard large pieces of rock and dirt drop ahead and behind them.
"Deborah, are you all right?"
David coughed away a new dust from his lungs. A moment in silent darkness passed, and at last Deborah gasped deeply and began to cough as well. He reached out and found her. In the blackness, he could only see her with his hands. Her legs were not injured. Her arms were okay. He moved his fingers to her face and head. No blood could be detected.
"Are you all right, my dear?"
he asked in a calming panic. She swallowed deeply and replied,
I'm fine. I fell on a rail or something."
David took her hands. His voice was the only thing she could focus on.
"Good. Good, yes. Those are the old tracks for the rail cars. We can follow them. Just be careful. Don't let go of my hand."
He helped her up once more, and soon they were walking, slower than before, forward into the shadowy void. Her fear was growing. She could feel her own heartbeat thumping in her chest. What had seemed possible was quickly fading into the humid air.
David, how can we do this?
The butler took a firmer hold upon her hand and pressed onward.
We can, and we will.
The elder man led the younger woman forward into an old and forgotten catacomb, a place where many others had journeyed in search of prizes and treasures denied in their time. Time was the only treasure that this mine still offered. But how much was left to find? There was nothing left to contemplate, no worries to consider, or choices to be made. The way ahead offered no sight or sound, no clue of what was waiting, but it was the only way left for David and Deborah to go. Life is making choices. The decisions that we each make define each moment of our existence. We choose one thing over another, and yet we also choose against that which we reject. Sometimes we are conscious of this practice, usually when the choices are most difficult. Such as the moment that David turned away from the life he had created and managed for 6 decades. But we must choose, or else surrender to chaos. This is no different for Perry Long. With his last breath, he answered Dr. Jason Rodriguez. Perry Long accepted the offer of salvation, and though he did not believe in God fully, his thoughts turned to the possibility that he had traded body for soul. He was only troubled by this paradox for a fleeting instant, though, because all thought vanished as his heart finally came to a rest. His eyes were wide and fixed. A breath crept out from his lungs, and his mouth opened gently. Had the circumstances of life differed even slightly, or had any single different choice been made throughout the course of his life, Perry would have died. But the man, kneeling before his body now, possessed the means to prevent this fate, and the intention to see it through. Jason turned to the girl. Cindy was astonished at the sight of this, confused and sickened. He remained calm and began to explain what was to happen next with measured and specific words.
This is it. I need you to come over here.
Rodriguez was kneeling beside Perry. Cindy shook off her nerves and steeled herself. She stepped over to Jason, eager for instructions.
Listen to me carefully. I'm going to lower my head, and I need you to take the syringe in your hand and insert the needle here.
He dropped his head down and reached to the rear of his neck, lifting a small amount of hair that was drooping down from the back of his head. Using his index finger, he pointed to a specific location at the center of his neck, where it meets the skull.
Do you see where I'm pointing?
He glanced up to her. She nodded slowly.
Good. Okay, come here.
She took another step in his direction. Cindy was standing directly beside the doctor. He reached back and took the needle in his hand, taking her hand in his, placing it at the exact spot he had just pointed. Cindy began to shake. Jason turned his head and looked up into her eyes again.
It's okay. Do you remember what I said before? I know this will look really bad, but I need for you to take a deep breath and let it out. Just relax. You can't hurt me. Not badly, anyway.
Dr. Rodriguez smiled. Cindy felt herself do the same. She did as he suggested, and breathed in and out very slowly. She shut her eyes, and then opened them again. Jason paused for a second as he looked into her eyes. He seemed so sure of all of this, and his confidence gave Cindy enough of her own so that she ignored her instinct to drop the needle and run away. She was finished running. She was done with that way of life, for it had been no life at all. The girl took a firmer hold on the syringe. Jason could see her reach an internal resolution, and so he continued.
When I tell you, I want you to push the needle into the back of my neck as hard as you can. Push it straight in. Once it is in, immediately pull the plunger back with your fingers. The tube will fill with blood. When it looks full, pull the entire needle out. Be very careful with the needle. Do not drop it.
The girl listened carefully, and when the explanation was finished, she nodded once. Jason nodded too.
Be strong. This will all be over in a minute. Remember, it will look bad, but I will be okay. I'm not going to get hurt. When you take the needle out, just keep it safe for a moment. Everything will be fine, okay?
She swallowed and nodded her head once again. Jason did the same. He turned away from her and stared at Perry's body. He was not sure if this would work. The ranger was dead. He would have to move quickly once he had the serum. He said a silent prayer and asked God not for help or understanding, but to look the other way. What had to happen here was beyond the natural. Nothing about this act was sacred, but Jason prayed that God would understand. He shut his eyes, his lungs filled with the cool sewer air. It was time.
Now. Do it now, he ordered abruptly.
Cindy hesitated for an instant. Bob gave her his strength. Together, they pushed the needle into the doctor's flesh until the silver tip vanished. She felt a jolt as it struck something hard, perhaps bone. She started to pull the plunger back when something unexpected and terrifying occurred. Dr. Rodriguez seemed to slip into some sort of seizure. His body pulsated with tiny vibrations as though his entire body had become electrified. And perhaps it had, because at this moment she began to withdraw his blood, or what should have been his blood. Something in her told the girl to keep moving, that stopping would cause some terrible catastrophe to unfold, and so she forced her hand to continue its work. But the moment only became more frightening. The tube filled with a thick red substance that seemed to swirl around in a cyclone. She could see strands of thin pieces within the tempest, dark crimson threads of flesh. They appeared and vanished as though at will, emerging from the churning blood and then dissipating within the fluid. This was something she had not expected. A monstrous, omitted surprise, but paled to the presence of the light. As Cindy continued to withdraw the blood, a bolt of what appeared to be electricity suddenly fired from Jason's left shoulder. The blast struck an iron wall above her. The shock of this knocked the girl from her feet. Cindy dropped to the floor and stared in disbelief as another blue flash buzzed, burning a hole into one of the rails of the stepladder nearby. Bob took her hand. Cindy was so afraid. None of this had been expected or explained. She looked at the doctor again. He seemed to be frozen in his crouch, as though paralyzed and solidified, like a statue of some strange and obscene thing.
"What do we do?"
Cindy asked her eldest friend. Bob had no immediate answer. Colt had backed away from Perry momentarily. The dog was staring and growling lowly, but appeared to understand even less of this development than she did. It barked at the frozen body of Jason Rodriguez, and barked again, as yet another bolt of light blew past the girl, catching some of her hair in a gust of ionized air. If this moment was allowed to continue, Cindy felt assured that this bizarre manifestation of human-spawned lightning would eventually kill everyone here. This was not natural, and therefore beyond the common reasoning of the possible. She had prepared herself for the possibility of further amazements when the doctor had warned that this would all look bad. But the extent and severity of this had exceeded all of her imagined fears. Perhaps he did not know that all of this would happen. Maybe this was unexpected, even to him. Bob and Cindy had faced the monster within, but all of the ugliness that the demon possessed, all of its might and power, had remained constrained to her thoughts. She could see the difference clearly here, between the two worlds, even with this supernatural incident developing before her. Her monster had great power, but this was real, tangible, present. This was a threat that could only be overcome with action. She remembered what Jason had told her, to pull the needle out immediately. Cindy saw it protruding from the man's neck. It was filled with the hideous fluid. Tiny sheets of lightning seemed to flash from one end of the hypodermic to the other. She had to act now. Summoning all of her courage, pooling this with all that Bob could offer, the girl rose to her feet and approached the two bodies. An odd noise was echoing from Jason's throat, something like the crackle of distant thunder. She did not want to wait any longer for new surprises to appear. Cindy knew now that God had made this happen, and that her life would never be the same again. She understood that she had been placed here in this moment because, as the doctor had said before, she was the only one that could do this. Cindy reached down. Colt whined, afraid for her, afraid for his friend, as she pulled the filled syringe free. The hind roared overhead. A steel drum rolled as flame blasted from it, ripping the resting Blackhawk to shreds. The pilot within had no time to react. Before his rotors could spin up, a rain of bullets poured across the fuselage from back to front. The metal sheets that comprised the bulk of the aircraft's hull splintered and snapped apart as the structure disintegrated. In seconds, the helicopter was completely destroyed. As terrible as this was, the pilot's sacrifice had spared the lives of several others who were nearby. Jim Peabody and his captain, Derek Hamilton, each took Kevin by the arm and rushed away from the coming attack. The three all leapt into the air,
diving off the side of a small bridge where their black Cadillac had come to a rest. The fall was brief. The ravine below the bridge was only about 6 feet deep. Gravel and mud collected at the base of the bridge, and only a small shallow stream of water poured down the center of the ditch. The trio landed softly enough, gathered themselves up, and then hastily ducked beneath the concrete overpass. Kevin winced and grabbed his shoulder. The pain was excruciating. Biting down, he forced a muffled shout of agony back inside. Jim turned his focus to the sky. He raised one of the pistols and watched intently as the sound of the whipping helicopter blades above seemed to change direction. Derek looked over Kevin for a moment, analyzed his wound, and then looked into his eyes. He searched those eyes for a long moment for some sign that the certainty of their purpose here might be in question. Derek looked for any doubt, but in that deep blue, he found only stronger certainty.
"You sure you want to do this, Kevin?"
Derek asked, but already knew the answer. Kevin Hill nodded and blinked away his pain.
"Welch and Emery can go to hell. Fuck these guys. Let's finish this."
Jim turned and raised an eyebrow to the frankness of these words. He nodded in affirmation. Derek did the same. They had come this far, knew that whatever goal James Welch had in mind, whatever means he intended, they shared a common enemy. Dorian's forces may overwhelm them, but there would never be a better time for this. Kevin, Jim, and Derek would see this through, even if there was no hope of escape after everything was over. Derek heard a radio blaring on the bridge above. Small machine guns fired rapid bursts, and the echo of the menacing hind resounded as it circled back. Emery and Welch had survived. The two ran quickly towards the compound gates, along with several of the remaining soldiers. The noise of their footsteps faded until Hamilton was assured that they had abandoned this area. Perhaps Jim, Kevin, and he had been presumed dead. There was no way to know for sure.
"We can follow this ditch for a ways. It should keep us out of view unless that gunship heads back this direction. If we head down a bit, there's probably going to be an inlet into the compound," Derek said as he eyed the curving stream. Jim took a long look the same direction and spoke lowly.
"Yeah, it looks like it heads that way."
Without waiting for further discussion, Kevin pulled himself away from the bridge and began stepping down the muddy path. Neither of his companions questioned this. Instead, they both followed close behind until they met his pace. Then, Jim moved ahead a few steps. The three pressed forwards around the curving gully, watching carefully as the sounds of combat grew more pronounced. They could hear guns of every manner discharging near and far. Grenades detonated and debris scattered into the sky. They had come to the edge of a large cement wall where a steel grate led into the enemy's home. It had fallen from its hinges long ago. The hole at the base of the wall was rounded and rose about 4 feet up from the ground. Small tree limbs and brush were gathered around the mouth of this drain. Jim pushed them aside and stepped through a muddy delta that had collected from a recent rain. Leading them, Peabody noticed the mansion ahead. It was resting peacefully at the center of two empty fields atop a brief plateau. Before this, several smaller homes and buildings could be seen. One of them was on fire. The remains of a Blackhawk were protruding out from a smoking brick wall. Another of the structures was ripped apart by bullet holes. Bloody corpses of men in black jackets and ties littered the doorway there. Every window had been broken apart. Both buildings looked to be abandoned by the advancing army. Jim raised one hand, halting the progress of Kevin and Derek as echoes began to chop the air. The Hind was returning. All three men ducked back under the wall and listened as rockets began to rain down on a group of men nearby. The concussion of the blast rocked the eardrums of all three men, but they could not see the bloody devastation unfold. They held their breaths and paused here, staring fiercely at Dorian's monument to wealth and power, settling their nerves for the moment when each would set aside all fear and rushed forward to their fate. Cindy blinked. Blinked again and opened her eyes. She could feel that they were open, but only darkness held her vision. A panic crept into her thoughts. She forced her eyes closed and held them shut tightly for a long moment, then opened them again. She could see nothing. The girl moved her hands in front of her face. She knew they were there, felt the odd vibration resonating from the syringe in her grip, but could see none of this. She started to hyperventilate. Jason put his hand on her cheek, letting her know that he was there, and spoke to her with comforting ease.
"Don't panic. You're going to be okay. The effect only lasts for a few minutes. Everything will be fine, okay?"
Cindy reached to him with her free hand. She took hold of his shirt tightly and struggled to calm herself. Memory returned to her. She saw herself pull the needle from the doctor's neck. As she did so, his body dropped to the sewer floor with a heavy thud, but not before one last bolt of electricity fired from him. It had struck her, apparently, across the eyes, rendering the girl unconscious and temporarily blind. She hoped that he was not lying to her. She prayed silently that she had placed her trust into the right person, that this time she would be rewarded for her trust instead of punished.
"Listen to me. You are going to be okay. It will only be a minute more. You're going to be fine. When your vision returns, it will look strange at first, but don't worry. It will pass. You'll see something. White at first. Silver, even. Like a line stretching across your vision. It looks almost like a river."
His voice was reassuring, and she tried to stay calm. Cindy could feel Colt at her side. He nuzzled close to her and began to lick her face. She let go of Jason's shirt and grabbed the dog around the neck. She was so grateful for him, so glad to have a friend. She saw a blurry haze forming at the edges of her vision. Her lips parted at the sight of it. It was beautiful, captivating, magical. The light began to form into a single, pulsating thread, filling in the gaps as it stretched left to right. Dr. Rodriguez held the girl closely as the river of light took her. He kept a careful eye on her face, intently monitoring, searching for any sign that damage had been done to her mind. He knew the power of this force, though he had never seen it visited upon a girl, and definitely not someone like this. If she was as strong as he thought, then she would overcome the call of the light and return to this reality. Cindy gasped in awe of the majesty within her thoughts. The river grew, widening, covering her in comforting warmth, taking doubt, fear, and pain. Her mind held this instant, clinging to the power of the river, reluctant to let go of the perfection that it contained. And she may have well been lost to this nirvana forever, if not for the friend that shared her thoughts.
"Let go of it,"
Bob whispered. Cindy heard him, his familiar, old and tiny voice. The riddle of the light captivated her, yet something about those words rang true.
"Let go of the light, Cindy. This is not for us."
Through the stunning aura, she saw her friend watching. Blindness had not taken him from her. She saw him, and her attention shifted, blinking. Blinking again, the girl forced the river away, struggled against the might of all it offered, and began to see again. Cindy saw Jason kneeling over her through a faint and hazy blur. He smiled. The girl had accomplished something that so many others would have failed at. She was strong indeed. He took her hand in his and held her. Colt began to wag his tail.
"You made it. You can see me, right?"
Cindy nodded.
"Good."
He reached down and released her grasp upon the needle.
"Now, let's save Perry Long."
The girl moved out of sightless shadow as Deborah and David struggled with theirs. The passage narrowed and narrowed again, shrinking inward. The air was no longer cool. It had become cold. And the dampness that was also growing brought a seemingly inescapable dread over them. All noise had left them some time ago. Only the immitigable darkness continued, consuming all sight and sound. How much deeper could this go? Deborah began to shiver, partly from the air and also from her unease.
"David, are you sure about this?"
The butler took a firmer grip upon the woman's hand.
"We have to keep going," he said with evident concern.
Deborah pressed.
"How much longer?"
He had no answer for her. David only kept walking, timing his steps with the wooden planks at his feet, following the rails, affixed to them, deeper and deeper into the unending tunnel. This has been Ethan Eternal, Chapter 29, The Darkest Hour. For more information, please visit onemanasylum.com.